Things aren't feeling as comfortable, and the clouds are with us too now with that rain chance starting up tonight. We'll have a pretty good chance some showers coming in tomorrow and Thursday too. You might want to have an umbrella nearby for both days. Warmer temperatures with the higher humidity. Sunny the rest of the day. Overnight, 60-70 with clouds and spotty showers. Scattered activity likely through the day tomorrow at the high of low 80s. Scattered Thursday, low 80s. Dry again Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with warmer temperatures back in the 80s. Greater New Orleans Military Show, exhibiting and selling world-class museum-quality military antiques and collectibles from the U.S., Japan, Germany, and from nations all over the world. Uniforms, hats, helmets, medals, patches, flight gear, vintage weapons from all eras and conflicts. Greater New Orleans Military Show, Saturday, Sunday, October 23rd, 24th, at the Castine Center, Mandeville. More info at greaterneworleansmilitaryshow.com.
Food show on another beautiful afternoon in October here in New Orleans. Well, we're actually in Covington. I'm outside again. Nothing happening. The neighbors are all behaving themselves. However, Patty, the wasps are there.
Are they back?
They had moved to like an inner corner. So maybe the cold weather, they wanted to nestle out of the north wind or something. But they're all still there. They're just around the corner. My daughter noticed that when she was over today. I'm Marianne Fitzmaurice. I'd love to talk to you about food. That's what we do, but we do have this little nature report since I'm sitting outside. And I've sort of gotten into that. Speaking of nature report, we are going to be talking about Creole tomatoes today. Last time we talked about tomatoes on the show, and I complained that tomatoes taste like nothing. And there's only one restaurant, it's on the North Shore, it's Lola, where I really notice delicious tomatoes. Now, to be fair, we don't get out much anymore, so there may be some great tomatoes happening in New Orleans, but I haven't been to a New Orleans restaurant in a while. Excuse me. So, but over here on the North Shore, it is really odd to find good tomatoes. Now, I've also had them at Chifuncta's, now that I'm really racking my brain. But that's it. That's it for good tomatoes. So, anyway, I wanted to find out why tomatoes are just bad now. And so we were just sort of musing about that, Patty and I, and then I got an email, as we often do, about something in the show. I got an email about Creole tomatoes and the origin of them, the way that they are farmed, etc. And I thought it would be interesting to have someone, and when I sent that to Patty, she was all over that. When I think someone had called, actually. And she was very excited about that. So in addition to the email that we got, someone called about this particular farmer. What's his name, Patty?
His name's Matt Renazza.
Okay. So we're going to be talking to him at 3 o'clock. Apparently, Frank Brightson has talked about his secret source of Creole tomatoes. And I am curious about that because I want to get in on that. We like Creole tomatoes, but I'm sure we're not going to get that one, but it will be interesting to hear about tomatoes, about, quote, Creole tomatoes, about why, as my daughter suggests, they are awful now and have been for a number of years. And when I tell her this, she will understand a little bit. I did do some reading in the email. And I'm very, very anxious to talk to him because I love tomatoes, not as much as my daughter does, but it's a pity it's really hard to find good tomatoes. Anyway, that is going to be our guest at 3 o'clock.
And he's a third-generation Creole tomato farmer.
Wait, what?
He's a third-generation Creole yes. tomato farmer.
Yes, I know. It's we're going to find out some interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. I can't hear you, Patty, so I don't know if it's me or you, but it's very low on your end. Very low. Hmm. All right. If you would like to talk about food, though, I'd love to talk about food with you until that time. Let's see. Tom has seafood gumbo day today. Seafood gumbo. I have to say that in restaurants, seafood gumbo, which is kind of not what you would expect, it's hard to find. I don't actually seek it out, but for every seafood gumbo on a menu, there's probably 5 chicken andouille gumbos out there. And I mean, I understand that the chicken andouille is also part of the culture, but you would think in a seafood, you know, seafood mecca like this is, that a gumbo, the go-to gumbo, would be seafood. Now, I think it's probably because seafood gumbo is much harder to cook. It's got a lot more ingredients. There are nuances that are present in seafood gumbo that aren't. I think a chicken andouille gumbo is probably a lot more forgiving than a seafood gumbo. Wouldn't you say so, Patty? Seems like it.
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
Yeah. Did you say that you cook seafood gumbo?
I do.
You do.
I cook okra.
You don't cook chicken andouille.
No.
Okay. So you're not a big chicken andouille fan, but a seafood gumbo person. And you cook it with some regularity, right?
Yeah, you know, probably, you know, as soon as it starts getting cold. I cooked it right when we came back after the hurricane because I just felt like I wanted it. And so I do, yeah, probably pretty often. Yeah, maybe once every two months or so.
And, oh, okay, I thought it was much more frequent than that.
No.
And so, but the reason you probably don't do it very often is that it's kind of a pain to do, huh? Is it a pain to do?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Well, you know, you got to stand over the stove with it. It's one of those things that you can't just turn on and walk away until everything gets going. But and I usually cook
maybe
big batches, so I freeze a lot of it. So we eat it a lot, a lot more often than I cook it just because I keep it in the freezer.
I would imagine that that's probably the reason on restaurant menus, seafood is seen about a fifth or sixth as much as chicken andouille. Because chicken andouille is kind of easy to make. It's pretty easy. And you can just sort of walk away from it. I think that must be it. Anyway, if you are a restaurateur, and you have something to say about that, if that is an incorrect assumption, call me, 556-9696. If you would like to talk about gumbo in any iteration, I would love to. That is sort of our signature dish here. Although, I wonder how many people order gumbo in restaurants. I would think that's one of those things that you do more cooking at home. And maybe don't bother ordering it in a restaurant. Speaking for myself, that's true. I do sometimes order it, especially if there's nothing else on the menu that I want to eat. Or if I'm looking into finding a good seafood gumbo, as I did a few months ago. I know Darren has something to say about this, as he does, about most things that are culturally significant in New Orleans. Hello, Darren.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay, but not great. Say some more, because I need to figure out why I can't hear you very well.
Oh, well, maybe it's because I'm going through my car. Can you not hear me? Let me put the phone to my ear.
No, it's
can
not
you. Hear
you.
Me
it's,
now?
Me. It's me. It's me.
Am I okay now?
Yeah, I'm blaming it on Patty, but it's me.
Oh, okay. I mean, can you hear me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Once I potted up my own headset, the right one, I hear you just fine. Sorry. Go ahead.
Gotcha. So I do have to tell you a funny story before I mention seafood gumbo. I was outside the other day, and my wife comes outside. She's like, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm videoing, but really not for the video, the audio of the ice cream man coming down the street. So I have that for you, but it's on my phone, so maybe I'll just have to call back and let me play it from my, like, I'll have to call back from a landline, and then I can play it from my iPhone. But
why don't you do this? Why don't you move it from your phone into your email?
I can do that.
And then email it to me at tom@nomenu.com.
And what's so funny is, I think you're going to probably say this when you listen to it. Oh, is that ice cream man speeding? Because it's pretty funny to hear the music, and the ice cream man was definitely speeding. So the music's like, zoom, it goes fast. But
now, it's been a long time since we talked about that. Why did we decide that we wanted the ice cream man video? I mean, the ice cream man song. We had a reason we wanted it.
Well, I thought because it's just so nostalgic and joyful and it's a slice of our past.
Well, yeah, definitely. But there was a particular reason I thought we decided we wanted to incorporate it into the show somehow, but I don't remember what it was.
Oh, maybe for one of your callers. I'm not sure. But I think in the past I've spoken with you about this. So in my college days, I was an assistant, or really a night manager, for Drusilla's.
Yes, you did.
And that was at a time when Drusilla's was still making everything from scratch. Mm-hmm. And the seafood gumbo was not only very good, it was one heck of a process. And I remember just the process of needing to de-slime the okra. But
how do you do that again? How do you de-slime okra?
Well, my memory was it was chopped, then it was put into these really large colanders. I think that's what you used, yes? Does that sound right?
Yeah, I guess. Uh-huh.
Like a colander, and then it was just continuously under cold running water, and periodically you would put your hands all the way at the bottom and turn it and turn it and turn it to the point where there was no remaining slime.
Now, was this pre-cooked or post-cooked?
This was pre, so it was still raw, hard. This was pre.
I've never noticed it. So are you talking about after it was chopped?
After it was chopped.
Okay. Okay. Patty, you mentioned something about de-sliming okra, too. How do you do it?
Yeah. My mother, the way my mom did it was we put it in a pot and we kept, on the stove, we kept another pot of hot water. And we just cooked it in the pot and kept stirring it and adding a little bit of hot water at a time. That's what I meant when I said you can't walk away from it. You just keep stirring the okra and keep adding a little bit of hot water and keep stirring it and add a little hot water and eventually all the slime goes away.
Well, now,
but now I use frozen cut
okra. Why is it necessary to de-slime okra? Because that's sort of one of the qualities of it. And I don't, maybe everything I've ever had with okra was de-slimed, but it doesn't really offend me that much.
I don't know if I really de-slime it or if the slime just mixes with the water, you know?
Well, I think some does. I think it would be just my memory of, because my mother, my late mother and late grandmother would also stew okra, but I think without any form of de-sliming, the viscosity would be pretty high.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be really thick.
Yeah.
But I just remember.
Which I would think would kind of thicken the soup in a way that would be pleasing.
What? Yeah, well, I would agree. I just remember the gumbo day was an all-day process.
I'll bet.
And that was back in the day when everything, so really good quality shrimp, good quality blue crab for gumbo and oysters. Mm-hmm. And I remember the gumbo was really good. And of course, when you use okra, there's that distinct, aside obviously from seeing the okra, it releases the little seeds, if you will. Mm-hmm. So obviously you realize, okay, in some form, okra's in here. But I just remember it being so good. And their gumbo is my favorite form of gumbo. It's not that thick or that I don't think pasty would be the right word, but almost like when you get a corn and crab chowder, it was that thin brown. It was just really done well. And it was, you know, always purchased. I mean, it was a huge item.
Yeah. It's definitely a labor of love, that is for sure. It's not something I would do for any reason. I guess the crab meat goes in at the very end, and maybe the shrimp too.
I think that all three would go mm-hmm. towards the end, because the oysters would take little to no time. And you know, I'm it's not my favorite because it's tomato based, but also I do think that Middendorf's does have a good seafood gumbo, or really I think they put shrimp and crab. Maybe they put oyster. I think they put all three. Mm-hmm. But they warn you when you order it, hey, are you familiar with a tomato-based gumbo? And there's actually pieces of cooked tomato, if you will, which I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but sure.
It's still not my favorite traditional. I'm sure what Patty makes is what I'm accustomed to, that traditional yeah. New Orleans seafood gumbo. I would think a place like Two Jacques would probably have a pretty good one.
Is it my imagination, Darren? When you go to restaurants, do you see one seafood gumbo for every five chicken gumbos?
Oh, no doubt. The whole yeah. chicken.
I think it's
even,
a labor of thing. Course,
yeah, and you know what? So a few weeks ago, my aunt did a turkey and sausage
okay.
gumbo. I mean,
Darren,
very similar.
I don't know why I can't hear you so very well. You can hold on. Patty's starting to yell at me. I don't want her to yell at me because okay. we're late for a break.
You got it.
Have you ever eaten something new and wondered where it had been all your life? We thought that about Double D sausage after having it at a friend's house. But restaurants all over town serve it in their gumbo, red beans, and jambalaya. It's made right in Bogalusa, and the company is in its third generation. Double D sausage is a light-smoked pure pork sausage with notes of sage and other spices. Try the regular mild and hot and new flavors like the Cajun variety and jalapeno and cheddar. Double D sausage in stores all over town. The best meals always start with the best ingredients. If you're cooking seafood, the best ingredients are at Mandeville Seafood. All local fish, Louisiana shrimp, oysters, crab, crawfish, wild salmon, and Dungeness crabs. With a little notice, Mandeville Seafood can get anything in the seafood universe you may want to try. Mandeville Seafood, celebrating 25 years.
I get misty just holding your hand.
Thank you, Tom. Is Darren still there? Did he hang on, or is he?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You're still there. Yes. Yes.
I'm here.
I can go a little bit long, but not super, super long. So go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
Oh, no. So I was just going to say that. So a few weeks ago, my aunt made... She makes a really good chicken or turkey and sausage gumbo. But I would agree with you. I think that some are really good, and there's a lot of that on a menu, but some, Marianne, are just not good at all.
Yeah.
And again, I don't like any type of gumbo that's got that bisque or chowder consistency. I want my gumbo not to be as thin as vegetable soup, but to not be thick as well. And that's
GW also Finns has a good one, but of course they would, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
That makes sense. I mean, yep. If you're not going to get a good seafood gumbo at GW Finns, you ain't getting one.
I would think so. I would think it would be outstanding. So, but anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. I don't know if Drusilla is still making their gumbo that way, if that one location remaining in Baton Rouge. But back in the day, in the late 80s, it was really well done.
I want to go there. I keep seeing the billboards for that place, and I'm always planning to go someplace in Baton Rouge before I even head to Baton Rouge, so I don't go to Drusilla's. But whenever I see that billboard, I say, you know, one of these days I got to get there. And one of these days I do have to get there. So I'll let you know when I go.
You got it. Well, you guys have a good day.
All right, take care. Send me
take care.
That song because I do want to hear it. It'll, at the very least, it'll make me crack up. But I really do feel like we had some reason for wanting it because we were going to use it.
When you listen, when you hear it, it may jog your memory.
Yeah,
so,
maybe.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Darren.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. 556-9696 is the number if you want to talk to me about food. I'm Marianne Fitzmaurice, keeping up the tradition, 33 years now, of the food show. We have a discussion about Creole tomatoes coming up at 3 o'clock because tomatoes are just not good, and we want to know why. Maybe we'll know why after we talk about Creole tomatoes. According to Tom's Almanac, he has much to say on seafood gumbo. Seafood gumbo is much more distinctly a New Orleans dish than chicken gumbo, which is not to say it's better. But while you can get chicken gumbo from Campbell's, canned seafood gumbo is a rarity. So is edible seafood gumbo in places outside Southeast Louisiana. The number of variations on seafood gumbo in New Orleans is equal to the number of cooks preparing it. Each version is regarded by the cook and his or her cadre of supplicant eaters as the one true seafood gumbo. This diversity is a good thing. It means the dish is still a living thing. That said, a few guidelines that ought to be followed. Okra, for example, seems essential. It gave gumbo its name, and in combination with the local seafood, it creates the classic gumbo flavor. The second essential is a shrimp or crab stock. Many recipes don't include that, but those that do are clearly better. Stocks are easy to make, take less than an hour, and use cheap ingredients, shrimp or crab shells. Then there's the roux. Although the vogue in recent years favors roux-less gumbo, it makes the gumbo better. Medium dark in color, it should be a smaller percentage of a seafood gumbo than for a chicken gumbo. Most controversial matter in the making of seafood gumbo is whether it should contain any tomato. Tom thinks it should, but not very much. It not only adds another flavor dimension, but solidifies the gumbo's Creole bona fides, is what they say now. Bona fides. The final touch in a great gumbo is to have the seafood added at the last minute. The shrimp, crab meat, or crab claws should be just barely cooked in advance, then added to the gumbo only enough ahead of serving to allow them to heat through. That avoids hard little shrimp and soft crab meat. Oysters should go in raw right before serving, with a couple minutes of simmering before serving. Seafood gumbo is, more than any other Creole dish, the one that is least often successfully exported. To eat a good one, you have to be somewhere around here. Boy, is that the truth. The idea of a gumbo anyplace else is about as ridiculous as barbecue shrimp someplace done by someone who doesn't know anything about this cuisine. 556-9696 is the number. If you want to talk to me, I'm Marianne Fitzmaurice. Let's do it. Call me. 556-9696. Let's see. The Edible Dictionary word we have a little bit of time for is brought to you by Dorignax, one of the top 20 regional supermarkets of all time, celebrating 75 years this year. The noises you hear now are the trucks going back down the road for the construction that is happening. It's quite noisy. Hazelnut is the Edible Dictionary word today. The nut of a tree in the Corylus genus. It resembles a small, light-colored chestnut. It's also known as a filbert. Hazelnuts are not much eaten on their own, but are ground into a near powder and blended with other ingredients. They are all only rarely the main component in the many confections made from them. Its best known starring role is in the spread Nutella, which is very popular in Europe and lately here. See a lot of Nutella here now. There's a bit of cocoa in Nutella, as there often is where hazelnut turns up. One of the most interesting is a Swiss candy called ice cubes. These appear to be ordinary squares of chocolate, but the presence of hazelnut powder in the mix brings the melting point down to approximately the temperature of the human mouth. As they melt, they absorb heat, giving a cooling effect. Hazelnuts are quite healthful to eat. I didn't used to eat them, but they're part of my nut mix, and I like them rather well. I still haven't warmed to macadamia nuts, and I don't know why, but that's a good thing because those are really expensive. All right, it's 2:30, time for Louisiana Radio Network News. We'll be back with more food talk after that.
Louisiana Radio Network News, I'm Dave Brennan. Homer Representative Tanner McGee didn't mince words when calling out the Governor's Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness for their slow progress setting up trailers for Hurricane Ida victims.
Even though more than 1,000 trailers have been purchased, only 13 have been distributed. McGee says GOSEP is dragging their feet and only gets...
We'll see. We'll look into it, kind of BS. And then finally, now that I wrote my letter and they're saying that they're going to make changes...
And those seeking shelter aren't getting any response.
Nothing. Just radio silence. So people are calling me just utterly frustrated, and rightfully frustrated, because they should get some sort of response over a week's time period.
He says there should be more accountability for the $9 million contract to oversee things.
It shouldn't take all these efforts just to do simple stuff.
I'm Brooke Thorington.
From Covington comes word from District Attorney Warren Montgomery's office that 18-year-old Larianna Jackson will be facing felony counts in a video recorded attack on a wheelchair-bound disabled teacher that went viral on the app TikTok. She's been charged with second-degree battery and cruelty to the infirmed. If found guilty, she could face up to 10 years in prison.
Hey there, what are you doing today? Would whatever it is be easier with faster, more reliable home internet? If you said yes, we have good news. Plus, you could save up to $150. Viasat offers high-speed satellite internet wherever you live, even if cable providers don't go there. So you can get online today and tomorrow. Go to viasat.com/connect now and save up to $150 on select home plans. That's viasat.com/connect now. Minimum 24-month service term. Service is not available in all areas. See viasat.com for additional terms and conditions.
I chose to get the vaccine because it's safe for me, it's safe for you, and it's the best way to eradicate this virus.
I don't want to be the reason that if I catch it and I end up giving it to somebody else. I'm not a scientist, but I can read, and I thought it was my responsibility to make my own decision for me first and then my community.
We have older people dying and children under 12 that cannot get the shot. Please get the shot.
The COVID-19 vaccine is now FDA approved. For information, visit covidvaccine.la.gov.
Over the last 75 years, New Orleans has gone through many changes, and so has WGSO. From our early beginnings in 1946, broadcasting from the Jung Hotel, being home to Papa Stappa in the 1950s, being a music station, talking biz radio to speakeasy New Orleans style, you, our loyal listeners, have been here every step of the way with WGSO. It's now our 75th anniversary, and we are so proud to have you here with us to celebrate. So we're going to celebrate all year long to show our gratitude to you and make 2021 our most successful year yet. And we will also continue to bring programs that appeal to people of all backgrounds. So from all of us at WGSO, we want to say thank you for making us the community voice of the Crescent City.
I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, madame, with you.
All righty, back to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Fitzmaurice. This is The Food Show, 33 years running. Let's talk about some food, huh? We're going to go someplace real tonight for dinner, although I don't know where that will be. I actually thought about trying to take Tom over to Katie's, but I don't know if we'll go that far. All right, words to write cookbooks by in the almanac today from John Le Carre, a novelist born in 1931. Having your book turned into a movie is like seeing your oxen turned into bouillon cubes. I don't know why or where Tom gets some of these sometimes, but they are mildly amusing. Anyway, today in 2000, Julia Child was awarded the French Legion of Honor. She won that for her long championing of French cooking, beginning with her first cookbook and television show Mastering the Art of French Cooking. That work woke up Americans to the possibility that they could cook in the French style, and many people took it up. Have you ever been so motivated, Patty, by a cooking show that it changed your life, like you became a gourmet?
No.
I don't see it. I don't see it.
I have been motivated to try different things, but no, not changed my life and made me a gourmet. Like, a cooking show taught me how to cook steaks in a cast iron pot on the top of the stove and then put them in the oven. You don't have to put them on the grill for them to be good. And I learned how to do that from a cooking show. But I don't think it changed my life.
Do you do a lot of cast iron cooking?
Just only with the steaks. That's the only thing I use.
Just the steak. Okay.
Yeah.
Where'd you get your cast iron pot? Did you inherit it?
No, I think I bought it at a hardware store. Like one of those places that the guy that advertises with us that sells the Basil's. It was a hardware store like Basil's. Yeah. It was one of those stores that have all kinds of things, and they had a cast iron pan. And I'm like, I want this. So I bought it.
Cast iron is coming back into style after, I don't know, 75 years of being out of style or being behind. Tom, please don't do that. Don't do that, babe. No, don't go down there. Okay?
What's that?
Don't do that, okay?
Everybody's gone.
It's fashionable now to cook in cast iron, to even cook desserts in cast iron, which seems really counterintuitive to me. But definitely a steak cooked in cast iron is a great idea. Mm-hmm. And I totally get it. I mean, pancakes, things like that. I mean, it's like a cast iron griddle. We have a cast iron griddle that we used forever and ever in this house, and it's really, really useful to have, but we never did use cast iron cookware. And I've begun to do that, and I like it. And I don't know if I like it because it's really that good or because it's really that fashionable all of a sudden again. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to be fashionable?
Sister.
Is this food related, Tom? Huh? Are you adding something about food and cast iron?
Yeah, mostly that, but I'm looking at people who have been working on jumbles all over the place for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And my sister, who is always get in touch with some of the people who
I'm not sure if this
here.
Is cast iron related.
And now she's just here.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of the local in the setup now.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to go and get anything, I don't have a phone number.
Yeah, it's not cast iron. No. It's not cast iron related. Okay, babe, we're going to take a break and we'll talk to you in just a sec, okay?
Well,
all right?
I just want to bring up.
Okay.
So I can talk about these things over there.
About cast iron?
Huh?
About cast iron?
Yeah.
Okay. 556-9696 is the number. If you want to talk to me, we would love to do that. Patty, go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back.
Keith Young's Steakhouse on the North Shore in Madisonville is everything anyone thinks of when a steakhouse comes to mind. The environment is elegant and handsome. The service staff is knowledgeable, attentive, and friendly. And most important, the steaks are superb. The steakhouse sides are also great. Keith Young's Steakhouse, 165 Highway 21, Madisonville, 985-845-9940. The Crescent City Steakhouse has been a favorite since the first time I discovered it on Mardi Gras Day. This old-fashioned steakhouse hasn't changed much since it opened in 1934. I love the steaks. Here is prime beef, dry-aged in-house, a great T-bone or porterhouse steak. The Vojkovic family has welcomed generations of locals to this special place, and they'd love to welcome you. Crescent City Steakhouse, 1001 North Broad, 821-3271.
When you're awake, the things you think come from the dreams you dream. Thought has wings, and lots of things are never what they seem.
Hello.
Hello.
Is he there? Oh, okay.
I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Gumbo.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. You really have to look no further than the price of crab meat and oysters to know why more restaurants aren't doing seafood gumbo.
Good point.
You'd have to charge $15, $20 a bowl just to make a decent profit on it right now.
Yeah. Interesting. Definitely. Do you also think, though, I mean, I kind of feel like it's a lot of work, too, for a kitchen.
I think both gumbos are a lot of work. I don't think one is significantly more than the other.
Really?
I mean, the base that you make gumbo with, regardless of whether it's meat or
it's
meat, I mean, it's roux, it's seasoning. Yeah. All that has to be done by hand.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's not a whole lot of different putting chicken and sausage in at the end or putting crab meat and shrimp in the end. You know, to me, it's about the same. I use okra in both gumbos, and I do so because I like okra.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what okra does to gumbo. I like the component that it adds. You know about the slimming okra. Are you familiar with that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Did you hear the earlier part of the show? Both Patty and Darren were talking about how to de-slime okra, and I was wondering if it was one of those processes where if you didn't do it, it wouldn't be all that noticeable, like the whole taking the bitterness out of eggplant thing.
No. It's completely different phenomena. I did not hear it because I wasn't in the room when Darren was speaking. But what it does, I mean, it literally, there's nothing more revolting than eating a bowl of gumbo and having the slime, for lack of a better word, from the okra in the gumbo. And what you do is, regardless of whether you're using frozen or fresh okra, you just heat up a pan, preferably a black iron skillet, to a really high temperature, and you add the cold okra, either the frozen or the fresh. And you just kind of pan saute it without any fat in the pan. And all that stuff comes out and sticks to the bottom of the pan. And it's a real pain. It's real pain to do it, not to do that, but to clean the pan afterwards. But to me, the aesthetics of not having all that in the gumbo itself is well worth the effort. And it's a much more genuine phenomena than the whole bit about the eggplant and the salt.
Does it change the consistency of the okra in that it puts sort of a shell on it, or can you not tell except that there's no slime, which is a terrible word when you're talking about food?
Yeah, what it does is it breaks the okra up a bit, okay? In other words, because of what's happening in the skillet, instead of the okra staying perfect little pieces, it kind of crushes a little bit, the seeds come out a little bit. But all of that is fine. I mean, you're just going to add that to the gumbo, and I think it actually kind of enhances the thickening of the gumbo by it breaking up like that as opposed to staying perfectly little cut pieces, you know? But I was watching one of the old PBS Channel 12 cooking shows the other day, and I got to disclaim that I've never been to Dookie's, and I've never had Dookie's gumbo, okay? But I think her grandson took it over, and he was making her recipe for gumbo. And I tell you, I just couldn't believe how drastically different that approach is from anything that I would ever attempt. I mean, I don't like seafood and meat combined in the same dish. That's the first thing. But he starts his roux. What he does, he cooks his hot sausage first. And he uses all the grease from the hot sausage to make his roux. And, I was just so turned off by what I'm... Now, the final product may be absolutely delicious, but I don't see any benefit from seafood and meat in the same bowl. To me, they just counter one another. I don't think they enhance one another. I think they actually counter one another.
Do you remember the old Bozo's gumbo?
Never had it. Never had
it. I never understood it. Did you ever did you go to Bozo's?
Yeah, but I never had the gumbo. I've heard Tom talk about it many times.
Yeah, it was like this hodgepodge of if you could picture all gumbos together. It was everything but the kitchen sink in there. And it was quite popular, and I never did understand that. I could never understand that. About Duke's gumbo, though, I got to tell you, I think that using the grease from the sausage was probably, first of all, a healthier alternative than canola oil. And secondly, I'll bet you it did add a lot of extra flavor to the gumbo.
Well,
I mean, I haven't had it myself, but I'll bet you it did.
Yeah, I guess if you're an aficionado of the combination of meat and seafood, it would be just fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, that just enhances the conflict between the meat and the seafood.
You know, I don't think ipso facto seafood and meat should not go together. I agree with you in gumbo for sure. But I got to say, that Alex Patu spaghetti dish with the cream sauce, the tasso, and the shrimp is just about one of the most divine things I've ever had.
Yeah, tasso is not the worst offender in the world. I mean, it's basically a seasoned ham. But I'm just not a surf and turf kind of person. I'm really not. The only surf and turf I ever had was at the old Marisol, and Vasquez did a dish one night with scallops I'm trying to think of that veal, that sweetbreads, scallops and sweetbreads. And that's probably the only surf and turf dish I've ever enjoyed in my life, to be honest with you.
Well, that's because both of those are peculiar.
The idea of crab meat on top of a steak is just a big turn off to me.
Agreed.
Okay? And I don't even particularly like it on top of veal, but really not on top of beef, you know.
Yeah. I think that maybe the fact that both of those items you just mentioned were sort of outliers, maybe it worked, you know.
Yeah.
Marisol, refresh my memory. Mm-hmm. I know it was hot for a little while and not very long lived. Where was it?
Right at the foot of Esplanade. Am I thinking of the wrong place? It's not Marisol. What am I thinking of? Pete Vasquez had that place. I must have said the wrong name. What? You know what I'm talking about? Right the corner of Decatur and Esplanade, where the old Tortilla Flats was in the old days.
Oh,
I think it was Marisol. I mean, was that Pete Vasquez's restaurant? Do you remember?
You know, Pete Vasquez, I didn't run into very much. I think that was before my time. It was not my time with Tom, but it was my time when the kids were little and Tom was doing his own thing. I knew the name.
Yeah.
I've known the name of Marisol. It was a restaurant, and I don't remember anything else about it. But I am interested in it, so if somebody wants to refresh our memories.
Yeah, well, regardless
of... Wait. No, that's not right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, regardless of what the name is, the restaurant I'm referring to was the one by the old Mint on Esplanade.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it survived Katrina. You know, we're talking 15 years ago at a minimum.
Okay.
And I haven't really thought about these places in a long time. So sometimes, you know, when I go to rehash that memory, I might pull up the wrong name.
No, but, I think Marisol is, in fact. I think it is. I think it was a restaurant. I think it was very trendy and popular. What happened to Pete Vasquez? He wasn't really all that long lived himself in the New Orleans restaurant scene, was he?
Yeah, Pete was an unusual guy, is an unusual guy. He went to, I think he went to D.C. after Katrina.
Mm.
And he had a lot of accreditations, I believe, as far as security work.
A lot of buzz about him, a lot of buzz.
Okay, so no, I'm saying is he was into security work after Katrina. I'm 99% sure of that. And then at some point he did make his way back to the area. Last I heard, he was making pâtés and stuff out of his house, I think in Algiers.
But that is the last I heard.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything since then.
At the cheese shop, St. James Cheese. Didn't he have a wife that was pretty prominent with him? It was like him and his wife?
Yeah, Janice ran in front of the house.
Okay.
And yeah, and she did a good job. You know, I always enjoyed being there. It was always a pleasant experience.
Are we talking about the place that was in that hotel that was directly across Esplanade from the Mint?
No, this was a freestanding building. This is not a hotel.
Okay.
This was up in that area like where Ruby Red's was, up at that very end of Esplanade.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, anybody can fill in any details on Pete and Janice. Where is that, Patty? You know Esplanade where more.
Yeah, it was at 437 Esplanade, which would be four blocks from the river on Esplanade. Okay. So it would be right where Mike said. It's probably around where Ruby Red's or Checkpoint Charlie's, right up in there.
Okay. Was it, in fact, Marisol?
It was Marisol.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I was second-guessing myself, but it was.
I don't know either, Mike, because you're on it, man.
You had everything else. His wife's name is Janice.
Before you escaped to the North Shore, you were all over this stuff. So I'm sure your memory serves you quite well.
This is all ancient history.
Defined ancient. Anyway, I'm now curious. Anybody know what happened to Pete and Janice Vasquez? I know the name. This was, like I said, way before my time of being involved in all this. So
let me tell you real quickly, changing the subject, cast iron, you know, what goes around comes around. 35 years ago, I had some Japanese friends that I had invited over for dinner, and you know, we'd like to do the tabletop thing at the coffee table and all that, and I didn't have the appropriate pans to do the sukiyaki, or like the gaijin say, the sukiyaki. All right. So I went to, like Patty said, I went to the hardware store and I bought a couple of 10-inch cast iron skillets. And back in those days, most of what you bought was raw cast iron. Very little of it was pre-finished. Mm-hmm. So I went ahead and finished them in the oven, you know, coated them with the oil and baked them in the oven for about an hour.
Long story short,
I have used those cast iron skillets for 35 years. I use them pretty much on a daily basis.
Really?
And it really amazes me how often I use both of them in one night for two different things.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it goes without saying, it's the type of thing that just gets better and better with age. You know, I mean, the more seasoned it becomes, I mean, it's like Teflon now. There's very little sticks to it because it has such a good finish on it.
Yeah.
But I love cooking on cast iron. There's a learning curve with cast iron, just like there's a learning curve with an electric stove. You know, if all you've cooked on is gas your whole life and you move to an electric stove, you have to reorient yourself.
Yeah, right.
Because just like the burner doesn't get cool immediately, well, the cast iron doesn't get cool immediately, you know?
No, yeah.
But once you learn to love that residual heat from the cast iron, you won't cook any other way. You know, it's just really good.
Well, it's like the natural way, you know, and I just wonder how all of these cooking surfaces like Teflon, for example, I would say ever became popular, but I know because, you know, who would think that margarine was a good idea, but we did it.
For somebody such as yourself that likes to cook at extremely high temperatures, there's no better cooking utensil for
it. It's made for me.
All right. Talk to you later.
Cooking.
Bye.
So, all right. Thanks.
We have
Pete Vasquez. I haven't heard that name in a while. Jules. Let's go to Jules.
Hello, Marianne. Hello,
hey.
Marianne. Hello.
Hi. I'm here.
Couple things. I can't agree with the guy. You know, the guy before. Great guy to listen to.
Yeah, he is.
His okra, I do it. Look, we all do things differently. I just take okra when I get my hands on fresh okra and parboil it and scoop it out of the water and then freeze it in plain water for future use, and it takes the slime off. And the okra stays nice and green, and it goes in, and it works. It does. The comment you made about shrimp and tasso in a cream sauce, that wouldn't apply at all to meat, to gumbo at all. My wife, my girlfriend, now my wife, gave me a wok a long time ago when we were dating. And I remember there was a cucumber and shrimp and ham soup. And it said, pork and shrimp always will have an affinity for each other. They always go together. Sausage and shrimps, tasso and shrimp. So I can see where you would love tasso in a shrimp cream sauce.
What could possibly be wrong with anything in a cream sauce?
Oh, I agree. And my favorite seasoning to use with cream sauce is Emerald's Essence Season. It's just the best seasoning to use with a cream sauce. You mentioned you cooking gumbo with sausage oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not me, Duke the crows. From Dookie Chase.
I love hearing the crows in the background.
I'm outside enjoying it, but I apologize for all the extraneous noise. At least
okay.
the neighbor
okay.
isn't
that's
cursing
okay.
in the background, so we have that to be thankful for.
The other night I heard the owls calling each other in Covington, where I live, at night, and it's something to listen to. Anyway, I'll take you back 2 years ago. You may not remember it. You went to the Exchange Club with Tom. And you sent Tom back to our tent, the Lagarde tent, to get gumbo twice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had cooked that gumbo with, the roux was made with, I used smoked chicken, and I had captured the grease from the chicken fat on the chicken thighs. So I used that oil as part of my roux. And I made my roux with it, and it's something I do whenever I get around to smoking chicken, and it enhances the flavor of a good smoked chicken and sausage gumbo. There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it at all.
Well, I'll tell you, not only is there nothing wrong with it, but everything that was in that tent that night was extraordinarily good. So you know what you're doing, sir. And I thought standout.
We have a good time. But I'm listening about gumbo. And, yes, I agree with the General Jack before that shrimp and oyster and crab meat should all stay in one pot, and then chicken and sausage or andouille ought to be in another pot. I really don't like mixing the meat
Agreed.
With the seafood in a gumbo.
Agreed. Did you ever have the Bozo gumbo?
No. I've been to Bozo's maybe once or twice.
Uh-huh.
I don't go to many restaurants in New Orleans. It's mostly here in the North Shore. I stay close to home. So,
well, Bozo's is long gone. Bozo's is long gone. One of my neighbors just flew by with a horse towed behind it at very high speed. And I would say, but I can't say it today. On the air. Go ahead. What?
No chainsaws and no motorcycles or anything today?
Well, no, we have a plane overhead in addition to the crows. I love the whippoorwill. The whippoorwill reminds me of my son when he was little. And it always just is so wistful to me. And it's only at a certain time of year. I haven't heard the whippoorwill lately. I don't know what time of year it is, but
I love the owls. And years ago, we had a holly tree outside of our bedroom, and I stood on the back porch, and I was teasing the owls by calling them. And later on that night, on a cold night, an owl ended up in that holly tree, and my wife woke me up and said, "Go take care of your girlfriend. She's looking for you."
I love living in the country. It's a whole different ball game. I don't know how I could ever live in the city. But anyway. All right,
the only
Jules. Kudos
to
you and your lovely family. That is quite a gesture that you make every year, and it's a really great tent. It's a pity that it was not happening this year, but you all weren't doing this year anyway, right?
No, we retired. The cousins and I, we were the Lagarde bunch. It was brothers, uncles, nephews, cousins, and hooligans. They were all Lagardes, and we just decided after 8 years we were going to retire and take a break.
Yeah.
But it was one of my, it's one of my fondest memories, Tom coming to the tent and said, Mary Ann said to come back and get another bowl of gumbo for her.
It was really good. It was really good.
Take care. Right. Enjoy talking to you. Bye.
I'm glad I know you. I didn't realize I knew you. I knew you as a good caller, but I didn't know that I actually knew you. Anyway, all right. Thanks, Jules. Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right. We have at the top of the hour, Patty, I couldn't hear you. It's not that I forgot. I couldn't hear his name. We have who at 3 o'clock?
Matt Renazza.
Okay.
Of Renazza Farms.
I did forget. I did hear that. Matt Renazza.
Renazza Farms in Belchase.
Third generation tomato farmer.
Yep.
And I hope that we will learn a lot about tomatoes, mainly where there are some good ones, because that's really hard to find, in my opinion, lately. 556-9696 is the number if you want to call after the top of the hour. If you have a question about tomatoes, I am sure that he can answer it, and I'm sure that you want to ask it, because we all want to know where the good tomatoes are. Even Dan Gill said, the good old days, remember when tomatoes tasted like tomatoes. So it's kind of a ubiquitous thought. It is 3 o'clock. It's time for the Louisiana Radio Network News, and you're listening to WGSO New Orleans. We'll be back.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says Democrats put together the American Rescue Plan to help make the American dream more obtainable.
Americans have found it's getting harder to reach. That's what creates a sourness in the land. That's the sunny optimism, so crucial to our identity, has receded away from view.
The New York Democrats saying the Build Back Better agenda will benefit American citizens for years to come while also addressing major issues like climate change. Gas prices continue their three-week climb. A AAA survey saying the national average price for regular jumped a cent and a half from Monday to $3.34 a gallon. Texas leads the nation with the least expensive gas. Meanwhile, no shocker, California has the highest. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
President Biden is continuing to meet with both moderate and progressive Democrats to try to get a price tag on the budget reconciliation bill, as moderates have said they want to see the price come down from the originally proposed $3.5 trillion. Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul joins Fox News and says the price will still add up over time.
They're not really whittling down what they're going to spend it on. They're just whittling down how long they're going to count the accounting period to be. So if it costs $5 trillion over 5 years and they only count $1 trillion, then that's $1 trillion. But that isn't making the program small. The programs are still enormous.
Striking John Deere workers are getting financial support from a GoFundMe page. Thousands of union members hit the picket lines last week in Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas. The fundraiser has brought in more than $50,000 within 3 days. The NBA season kicks off Tuesday night with the world champion Milwaukee Bucks hosting the Brooklyn Nets. USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
A new report says illegal immigrants are being flown to various locations in the A new report says illegal immigrants are being flown across the United States to various parts of the country in the dead of night.
As police officers are being fired for not having the COVID-19 vaccine, teachers are being fired, and countless Americans are losing their jobs because of President Biden's vaccine mandate. Now the Biden administration is trying to hide the fact that immigrants are being allowed into the country without...
As the humidity comes back, things aren't feeling as comfortable, and the clouds are with us too now. With that rain chance starting up tonight, we'll have a pretty good chance some showers coming in tomorrow and Thursday too. You might want to have an umbrella nearby for both days. Warmer temperatures with the higher humidity. Sunny the rest of the day. Overnight, 60-70 with clouds and spotty showers. Scattered activity likely through the day tomorrow at the high of low 80s. Scattered Thursday, low 80s. Dry again Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with warmer temperatures back in the 80s. Greater New Orleans Military Show, exhibiting and selling world-class museum-quality military antiques and collectibles from the U.S., Japan, Germany, and from nations all over the world. Uniforms, hats, helmets, medals, patches, flight gear, vintage weapons from all eras and conflicts. Greater New Orleans Military Show, Saturday, Sunday, October 23rd, 24th, at the Castine Center, Mandeville. More info at GreaterNewOrleansMilitaryShow.com.
For the second course of the food show, as Tom likes to say, or the second hour, as I tend to say. And we have our usual guest, not the usual guest, but this is our usual guest half hour. And today we have Matt Renazza from Renazza Farms down in DeParish, I guess, huh? Are you down there where everybody else is?
In Plaquemines, yes, ma'am.
Plaquemines, yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and you are a third generation tomato farmer down there.
Yes, ma'am. My grandpa and my uncle moved down here in 1933, and we've been farming the same piece of land since 1933.
Okie dokie. All right, so I hate Creole tomatoes now, and I used to love them. Why is that?
Well, the biggest thing is they allow the entire state to classify Creole tomatoes as Creole tomatoes now. So a lot of times you're getting Creole tomatoes that aren't actually Plaquemines or St. Bernard Creole tomatoes. And that's the difference, because it's the soil from the Mississippi River that really makes a Creole tomato a Creole tomato.
All right. If you have been farming Creole tomatoes, and I put that in quotes because, as I understand it, a Creole tomato designation is any red large tomato grown in a certain area in Louisiana.
Right. But
really, they could be different things. What?
It's Plaquemines. It's all Plaquemines and St. Bernard. Because anything grown in alluvial soil in the Mississippi River. And it makes a big difference. Now, the rest of them are homegrown, and they're good, but it just doesn't have that flavor and the humidity. When you cut one of my tomatoes, you can smell it. I mean, it's just... I'll cut it open and I'll tell my wife, oh, this is a good one, because the minute you cut a real Creole tomato from Plaquemines or St. Bernard, you can smell what it's all about. It's just fantastic the minute you cut it open.
Okay. That's what my daughter, who is a tomato fiend and who, as a young child, would eat so many tomatoes and strawberries that she had that condition where her palms were red, I don't know, from the lycopene. But anyway, she says that the old days of Creole tomatoes being good, you would put them in the house and you could smell them before you ate them. We haven't had that experience in a very long time. So if your family has been farming tomatoes for three generations, I would think if there's an actual change that you would have noticed it, you would understand it and be able to explain it beyond these aren't really Creole tomatoes. You're telling me that the tomatoes that you have been growing on your farm in the alluvial soil near the river,
yes, ma'am,
have not changed in all the time that your family's been doing it?
No, they have not. Not ours. And I know they just as good as they ever were. You know, we, matter of fact,
really?
We just had year before last, we just had a big taste test thing with planting older varieties, new varieties, and there was no difference in anything that was that came out. You know, and it we've been spot on. Now, one thing will affect it from year to year is the amount of moisture that the tomatoes get. If you get a lot of rain like this year, you won't get quite as much acid in them as you do in a dry year. People think a lot of rain is really good for a farm, and that it's not good for Creole tomatoes at all. And plants tend to store sugar under stress. So in drier years, you have better, you get better acid content in the tomatoes. But pretty much everything we grow is just top of the line. I mean, my wife just raves about the cucumbers and cauliflower we grow. We grow cauliflower, cabbage. I mean, it's just some of the sweetest cabbage you ever stewed down with pickle meat, you know?
So do you have a stand down there? Or I mean, where do your products turn up?
Right. We sell to all the local grocery stores in the city pretty much. We hit everybody.
Okay.
And the biggest thing is, you know, like there was a definite shortage this year. We're about 4,000 boxes off of this year from last year because of the amount of rainfall. We probably had, so far this year, we probably had close to 100 inches of rain.
Yeah, I know. It's been crazy. Although I'm really enjoying this dry spell right now.
Oh,
all right,
believe
so,
me. I get quite grumpy when it rains, and my wife is very happy when it's dry because I can go in the field and I can work and I can stay on my tractor. And, the dry weather is just, we have everything irrigated too. So dry weather is just tremendously beneficial for us, you know?
Okay. So how much acreage do you have down there?
The farm all told is about 300 acres, and then I can do a good job on about 40, 50 acres a season. And it tends to run a little bit more in the fall, simply because cabbage and cauliflower take more ground than tomatoes. We had about 6 acres of tomatoes this year, and that's what I plant about every year, 5 to 6 acres. And, you know, the yield went, like I said, we were about 12,000 boxes one year, and we'd have about 8,000 boxes this year, you know. And it's just, you just don't know.
You're able to sell to all the groceries in the area with 8,000 boxes?
Yes, ma'am.
That's really interesting. Do you have little stickers on your produce?
Yes, all of our tomatoes are stickered, yes. And
you
that's
do.
Always interesting because I'm usually running around the shed picking up the tapes with the stickers on, saying, please don't throw these stickers away. They're expensive.
See, I never pay attention to those stickers. And then Patty, our producer who contacted you, said that she does. And she got a farm on the North Shore based on their stickers. So I never pay attention to that. But obviously, I should be doing that. So I'm going to pay attention to the sticker on the tomato next year, I guess. You don't do tomatoes year-round, do you?
Well, we did have some. The day that Ida hit, we picked our first tomatoes the day before for the late crop. So we lost all that. That was about an acre and a half we had. That's all, you know, Ida took all that. And then I had another young patch planted behind that got hit really bad. But I've been able to save about a quarter of that acre. And they just kind of got little green tomatoes on them now, so I'm hoping that we get them in before the cold. So we're hopeful that we'll have a little bit more before the season, you know, before we get frost and freezes and whatnot.
What is the season?
The big traditional Creole tomato time is from the beginning of May to the end of July. And that's the big time with, you know, that's where we're really pumping out a lot of tomatoes really fast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are a blur for me. I work about 80, 90 hours a week at that time of year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. But do you don't, like, I would assume that you have workers who come in and pick. You're not doing that, your family, just your family, huh?
Well, I had actually, I got a bunch of guys
Well, a long time ago, I was a coach at Shaw High School, and so I got a bunch of those guys come in. And when they're off of day, a lot of them are teachers and whatnot now. They come in and they help me get the crops in at that time of year, you know.
So that's extra points.
I got a lot of those guys sticking with me, you know.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Yeah. Good thinking. Okay, so if you are having tomatoes now on the plants, little tomatoes, does it take that long for them to ripen? That's a long time from now.
Well, these will be in because we'll start the crop that's going to come in May. We're going to start in the hothouse in January. And then we plant the seeds in the hothouse.
I see. Then
we'll plant, you know, 25, 30,000 seeds. And then we take each one of those plants, individual plant out of them. I actually have these 10 pans that my grandpa bought. I don't know when. They're older than I am. And we dig them up out of these 10 pans, and we plant each one of those tomatoes individually in a black tray.
Mm-hmm.
And then we grow them in a tray till they're big enough to put in a field, and we take them out of those trays, and then
we put them
in the field. And all that's done by hand.
How can you make money at this?
that's you sound like my wife.
That's a lot of work. Well, that's a woman
is.
For you.
Yes, that's true. It is. Yes, it is quite a lot of work. Yeah.
Golly.
Some years are good. Some years are bad. You know, it's just you depend on the weather. Somebody told me one time, "Oh man, you don't go to the casino." And I started laughing at him. I said, "You have no idea."